You're listening to Artbank on 95 BFM.
That was Quasi, and I'm on the line with Sean Higgins, who is the curator pictorial at the Auckland War Memorial Museum, and we're speaking about Olaf Peterson, whose exhibition and catalogue has just come out. So it's kind of a bit of a moment for this late but very significant Auckland photographer. Hi, Sean. How's your morning going?
Great, thank you. It's good to be here.
And I was wondering if you could just introduce us a little bit to your position as curator pictorial. What does that encompass?
Sure. So as curator pictorial, I look after the museum's photography collection and a smaller collection of paintings and drawings. The curatorial role is about developing the collection, growing the collection. So that means that I collect things for the future the museum looks after, and it also has a role in developing exhibitions and working on content. So that's curating shows and even sometimes small public talks and things that the museum does for the public.
And are you coming from a archaeological or historical or art historical background?
Actually, all. So, yeah, I've got backgrounds in all of those directions, and as well as actually doing some photography work myself too. So it's kind of all the things thrown in together, which seems to make the right mix.
Well, yeah, it does feel like the right mix for this show in particular. I mean, Olaf Peterson was a major fixture, it seems, from the, I think, the 1940s through 80s, if I'm correct?
Yeah, that's right. So he starts out amateur in about 33, he picks up a camera. He joins the camera club, Auckland Camera Club, in 35, and then he really goes, shall we say, for about 15 years of being an enthusiast, and then in the 50s he decides to go professional, and that's really when his professional career begins. And that's right up until the 80s. So yeah, it's a good 50 years of photography in the 20th century.
And in the catalogue essay for the catalogue, which has come out through Auckland University Press, I think you and Andrew Clifford both touch on the fact that he managed to make a living as a wedding photographer and as a press photographer while also developing a kind of quite unique avant-garde approach to photography. And that's sort of a rarity in that time period, really.
Yeah, there's certainly an interesting overlap that he has, which is, I think, one of his special, unique aspects is that he can combine all those things. You know, he knows what his bread and butter is, but I think there's a pivotal moment where he finds even his nature photography, which is the thing he really wanted to do in his spare time, can actually have appeal. Things like the Weekly News and New Zealand Herald. You know, once there's an awareness that photography is also a commercial potential, I think for him that kind of changed everything, because he could just increasingly do more and more of that.
Yeah, there's this wonderful image that was published in an Australian magazine as sort of a international tourist photographers travelling around the country, and it's this amazing colour image, a rare colour image from him of this tree in the Australian desert, and it is this kind of, yeah, you can see that intersection of his commercial and artistic practices, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And that image was taken on a Photographic Society of New Zealand trip as well, which they got together. It's quite a funny thing to imagine about 60 photographers travelling somewhere together and all photographing the same things, but coming up with different images.
For people who aren't familiar with Olaf Peterson, who haven't had a chance to visit the exhibition yet, what kind of, you know, what really distinguishes him from his contemporaries?
I would say a simple word, sand. So something that's really different about his work is the texture and light and sands. So he had an intimate knowledge of what to expect when a certain type of rain happens or a storm comes through or wind, and what sort of formations he would find. And he would go out, especially out west, because, you know, he lived in Swanson, and he would just head off to the coast regularly, and he would find these sand forms. You know, images like So Lonely have a very different look, where it's just wet sand just after the rain, to something like Walkabout, which has these giant pillars of sand that have formed from wind, and they only lasted a couple of days, but he would find that sort of thing. And those images, what's quite interesting is they're often entirely sand. There's no sky, no horizon line. So the whole composition is sand. And in that, he sometimes places children, photo finish, holidays, or the walkabout one I mentioned, where you've got these children as like in a fantasy world of sand around them. And it's quite a distinctive look. And the sunlight that he captures on those dunes also, of course, creates another aspect to that quite unique approach. He actually said that his approach was all about achieving mood. You know, so he was really looking at what he was photographing as a means to an end to try to find that mood or feeling.
Yeah, there's a real kind of, you know, sense of the sublime in a lot of these images, and that kind of, yeah, that grandeur and almost a kind of painterly quality. And I was wondering, is that, you know, in the context of the photographic clubs of the time, which, you know, was when you look at these kind of histories of photography all around, you know, America, Britain, Aotearoa, like those clubs really are often the kind of catchment for a lot of photographers. Is that, you know, was he in a moment there, or was he pushing against what might be perceived as a kind of pictorial conservatism?
Yeah, definitely pushing against as he developed. So early on in the 30s, his work is quite similar to some of those trends, but you get these amazing people joining the club, like Frank Hoffman or Steve Rumsey, and Frank Hoffman introduced this notion of experimenting with your work, and comes from a very modernist background from Europe, bringing in these ideas. And then Steve Rumsey is quite famous for encouraging the conceptual approach, which is very similar to what I was talking about with Peterson, conceiving that kind of mood or idea. Certainly those people would have had a profound impact on the then enthusiast Peterson. And then when Peterson goes professional, you start to see him sort of developing his own direction. One thing that he does affect the club with, when he famously in 43, they go out finally gets them outside. And he takes the club on these trips out to places like Tahinga, his favourite place, and inspires them a bit more into that kind of outdoor nature environment. So that, I think that was what he felt that he could offer, just that familiarity with the subject material outdoors and try to pull them out there. But very much, he was very much, along with his friends, that notion of change coming through And shall we say, moving towards where photography stood as photography, not trying to pretend not to be photography like it did earlier.
Yeah, there's some quite interesting discussions around that, you know, that point at which photography becomes an art form as well, or where it's perceived as an art rather than a science.
Yeah.
I was also curious, you know, he had an interesting background. His parents were both Scandinavian immigrants. And this is probably quite a facile observation, but there is something of kind of, you know, Ingmar Bergman to these images of like, you know, rolling waves on a kind of isolated shoreline. And I was wondering, do you think there is that kind of, you know, his mother was Swedish, his father was, is it Danish?
Danish.
Yeah. Do you think that informs his way of looking at the West Auckland coastline?
I expect there would have been definitely some cultural norm for the way that he lived at home and perhaps the way he looked at things. I mean, when I think Scandinavian, I think minimalism and things like that. And I can certainly, if I think about some of his images, like So Lonely, for example, the book cover and the image with the tiny oyster catcher in this endless sand, you know, he quite often uses just a single element. And that to me, perhaps could be seen as a little bit of that eye, that he's not going for complicated scenes with too much going on. Actually, there's a later work that's quite simple called A Hangover, which is a piece of sackcloth caught on a fence, a barbed wire fence in a storm. Just, you know, right close in on this fence line, you can't see any of the landscape or anything like that. All you can see is this cloth hanging on the barbed wire.
Yeah, there's a wonderful range of subjects that he kind of focused on, and there's a number given of, you know, 50,000 images shot in a lifetime, and you've had to narrow that down to just a speckle of that body of work. And I was wondering, how do you approach that larger task?
Yeah, so the collection is 50,000 negatives, but we also luckily have his set of competition prints. So those are the prints that he hand-printed and exhibited, and they show, what I like is they also show his darkroom practice and that skill. So he's good with, he's got his composition, but he's also got his darkroom practice. And there's actually a film in the exhibition, by the way, called Olive's Coast, which does actually show him printing an image called The End of the Road and burning and dodging with his hands as he prints it. But back to narrowing it down, so those 400 prints made it a little easier than the 50,000, so we decided to go with the images that he's printed. And then the other thing was, it was going to be a show about nature photography, kind of his passion. So though he has an enormous amount of commercial work, and of course covering social events, documentary photography out west, that's for another show. We decided that this was going to be about his nature photography, things he chose to compete with, and really the things that he did for his joy and passion. So then it was just a matter of coming up with some themes that were really evident, and actually they're mostly environmental in terms of sand and sea, and then you know, those raw elements that you see, and then flora and fauna, and sort of tail-ending that at the beginning, you've just got a bit of introduction to who he was and what the West meant to him, and then at the end, a bit of humour and satire in his work, just to kind of blank those things. And in the middle, I shouldn't forget it, it's very important, the Auckland University Field Club membership, which was one of his main ways that he actually got access to wildlife out in offshore islands and places like that. And he was quite inspired by his time with them and took a lot of his very famous images that ended up going into newspapers and things like that. So that club was hugely important. It's an outdoor science club, and he was a member of that club. Yeah, and his own work in there, his kind of environmental approach, shall we say, of shag studies. So there's quite a lot crammed into two rooms.
Yeah, it is like a very kind of momentous body of images, I think, and like it is amazing to see someone with such a clear, I suppose it is that, you know, with photography it's that mix of technical skill and what might be termed vision. And I was also, yeah, I was curious, like, you know, he passed away in 1994 and the museum inherited his archives, or was gifted his archives. What meant that this exhibition felt right for now?
Well, a couple of things. So in 2021, I submitted and inscribed the collection to the UNESCO National Register for Documentary Heritage. So there's an international register, which has Te Tiriti o Waitangi and things like that, but there's actually a national register, which is collections that are deemed of national significance, shall we say. And getting him on that was a nice start, because it gave that recognition that there's actually some importance in his work. And I think the real push there was, I was interested in what happens when we start looking at those 50,000 negatives. Can we document change over time and places he visited regularly and things like that? And of course the social history that is evident in that work as well. So that was one. And then of course the Auckland University Field Club this year is celebrating 100 years since they started, which is quite a nice parallel to having a show that features a lot of them personally in the photographs. So I thought that was a really nice way. And we'd completed the book a year before, mostly in lockdown, which is quite an odd experience. But luckily we had enough the collection digitised to be able to access it as we worked on it. So all of those things kind of culminated in this right time to dedicate a show. And the other thing I think is, you know, it's since 1988, it's been at the museum, and more than ever, I think we're now in that kind of time where we need to be looking at shows about nature and a bit more awareness about the world around us, but the non-human world, or how humans interact with that world. So I thought it's a nice way to address that and let people see what somebody saw back then.
I think there's also something quite special about it in terms of, you know, it's now, what, 2 years since the majority of people have been able to travel overseas, and having this body of work that really finds a lot of wonder and you know, excitement and just exploring what is relatively a very small terrain.
Absolutely.
Yeah, this kind of domestic passion feels really kind of like a beautiful expression of you know, natural, or like a love for the natural environment.
Yeah,
there is a kind of, we're talking a lot about the majesty of these images and the kind of the painterliness of how he works with sand, but he also has these quite almost glib titles. One of the images is called "I'm Late," and it's this I can't remember what type of bird it is, but it's running along.
It's a gull trick.
It's this incredible image, and then it feels like it's kind of cut down a little bit by this title, "I'm Late." Like it's like a New Yorker cartoon.
The title is revealing his humour there, which a lot of his titles do. So around the time that image was taken, there was a movie on the silver screen, which was an adaptation of Alice in Wonderland. And that's the first time, because in the book, the rabbit doesn't say, "I'm late," it says, "Oh dear." But in this film, this white rabbit was running around off balance and saying, "I'm late, I'm late." And that seems to be, cannot be a coincidence, let's say, that he happens to come up with this quite comical-looking image of a gull chick at Moriwai that's falling forward into the frame and ahead of you. And you do get that very rushed feeling when you look at it. And I think that title is deliberately something that he's picked up from perhaps seeing that film or at least being aware of it.
Yeah, there's also there's this kind of great thing where you can see the gull chick is running along and it's this kind of special moment, and the fact that he was able to just be there and witness it and get that image, like get the image right, also feels like the "I'm late" is kind of, I guess that being in the right moment at the right time seems to be such an important part of his.
He's quite famous for taking quite a long time sometimes on his shots, on his photographs. So he'll conceive of an image and whether he's out with the Auckland Camera Club, for example, and or the Field Club, a lot of stories there as well about suddenly having to wait because he's decided he wants this shot, and he'll just be looking and saying, "Oh, I've got a picture in mind. I'll just wait. The light's not right, or the weather's not quite where I want it, but I'll just wait." So there's definitely a lot of that preconception happening, with not much regard for the poor other people that have to wait.
Maybe this is a broader question about museological practice, but I was wondering when you think about your role in situating this exhibition in a museum and the history of photography as a kind of, for a long time, a sightless medium, which is, one of the reasons these clubs grew. What do you think it means to place him in a museological context rather than art gallery, where, we go to the Auckland Art Gallery Toa Tamaki and we might see Peter Peria. How do you think that changes the work?
I think in terms of Peterson in particular, the fit works very well because Auckland Museum also has a very strong natural sciences tradition, and honouring that notion that Peterson himself was a member of the Field Club, he was witnessing science. The Field Club did stuff like collecting, measuring, observing out on the offshore islands, as I said, Tuatara and things like that. That's what Liam Pop, his photograph is of Tuatara and Young. And I feel like that fit, and of course the shag study that he did, which required climbing on a rope down the cliffs at Tuhinga and monitoring shags for about 7 years, he did that on his own. And that was his interest because they were being hunted, and he was very concerned about their safety. So all of that kind of interest that he had led him to work with the museum even back then. Graham Turbitt, who was at the museum, published a piece on the shags with him. So he had that long involvement. And of course, he would have had an involvement with the art gallery too, because the Auckland Camera Club did have displays there. But I think that beautiful union that he has, where he can sit on arts, humanity, and the natural sciences, is one of the reasons that it works really well in a place that can offer a mixture of those things. That it really comes through, that you can come and see the show if you want to see art, you can come and see the show if you want to see natural science, or if you want to see people from the places he loved, then you can see all those things in his photographs. And that's why it's kind of a nice way to bring it together.
Oh, thank you so much for speaking to me this morning, Sean. It's a really, it's a really exciting thing. I wasn't familiar with his work before encountering the exhibition in the book. So it is kind of like, I don't know, you know, it's quite, there's something quite exciting when you encounter someone that it feels is maybe one of those keys to a national kind of iconography.
Yeah, certainly something, when you find something new, when I first saw his work, I grew up in West Auckland and it resonated with me so strongly. But, you know, this photographer, this very humble, modest man, which is exactly why no one knows about him. he's such a modest man that you know, that's kind of, it was almost like a mission to make him known. And a lot of people out west feel the same, I'm sure, especially when they see these places so beautifully rendered as he does make them.
And Nature Boy, the photography of Olaf Peterson, is on now. It's just opened at the Auckland War Memorial Museum, and the catalogue is out from Auckland University Press. We're going to jump into a track now. This is Mitski with Stay Soft.
95 BFM's Art Bank.